Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A little slow on the get started this evening by about 50 seconds or so. My apologies. But that's because we're still tinkering with machines and all kinds of computers and foolishness and carrying on and whatnot. And, you know. But that's how these things work around here. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. We did. Sort of. Up until that Saturday evening, watch the Mountaineers throw away a perfectly good victory and watch our the mule-faced fundamentalist head coach snatch defeat from the jaws of victory on the plains at Auburn. God, I mean, come on. Yeah, there were lots of turnovers, and Auburn scored off of every turnover, but there were two that stand out. There was this little middle screen thing that they tried to throw, and the first time it got intercepted. Because the thing just wouldn't develop. Whoever was supposed to be doing whatever it was they were supposed to be doing wasn't doing it, or it wasn't working, or Auburn had it defensed, or whatever. And it turned into an interception that turned into a touchdown. Now, I don't know that much about the coaching profession, but there's something inside me that says, when it works that disastrously the first time you try to run it, let's tuck that one back in the playbook and work on it some on Monday, because it might be handy against another opponent, but it ain't going to work against this one. But no! No, 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 no. Our fundamentalist head coach and his offensive coordinator called it a second time when the game might still have been salvaged. Thanks for playing. Another interception. More points. And it was out of hand. So that was the downside of my weekend. I hope, okay, let's put it this way. If you're a Cowboys fan, we'll just have to agree to disagree. I hope everybody else's team won. But I have to tell you, it was a blissful thing. It was an absolutely blissful thing watching the Cowboys lose in their home opener in their brand new Taj Mahjerry. And that great big stupid screen. You know, the one that they had to rewrite the NFL rulebook for in case somebody, you know, if somebody punts it and they get really, really good hang time and it bangs into the dumbass screen, we'll just have a do-over. You know, punting, hang times, you know, you want hang times so that the team can get downfield and, you know, it's football. But no, Jerry Jones puts his big ego screen up. And, the NFL said, no, if it hits, that's a do-over. No, the answer is, Jerry, we realize you think you're God, but you're not, and you have to take the big dumbass screen down. Put it on eBay, Jerry. But, so nobody punted into the big screen last night, as far as I could tell, but there were some big screen moments. Tony Romo did a lovely job of throwing the football to the other side several times last night. That was a beautiful thing. But more beautiful by far was the high-definition picture of Jerry Jones after some disastrous Cowboys play, and the camera pans to Jerry Jones, and there's Jerry picking his nose on giant jumbo. I mean, this thing dwarfs a Jumbotron. Giant ultra jumbo mega Jumbotron video, and Jerry's nose mining. You just know that guy's a pig licking. I mean, he just is. I know it because, well, he was sitting there next to Dem leader, former Dem leader, George W., getting out of the house a little bit, going to go to the Cowboys game. Yeah, I think maybe they're finally going to win a few. No. And it doesn't look like the time away has done anything for George. He looked just as dumb as he ever was. And I hate to admit it. I hate to enrich any right-winger, any Republican. But I'm thinking I got to read this book. This book, what's the guy's name? Matt Latimer, whatever, that has written this. It's just full of juicy tidbits, apparently, about George. Our buddy David in Tennessee sent along an article from The Onion, and I had to check to make sure it was The Onion after seeing George last night with that sort of blank, open-mouthed, vacuous look going for him on the giant Jerry Jumbo. But, yeah, it's from The Onion, but it's such delightful reality. Just to share a little piece of headline, George W. Bush chuckles to self upon thinking about how he was president of the United States for almost a decade. I don't see that as parody. I don't see that as satire. I see that as reality. Yeah. While sitting alone on the porch of his home late Monday afternoon, George W. Bush, 63, chuckled upon suddenly remembering that he was once the president of the United States of America for nearly a decade. Uttered the amused former world leader, reflecting upon how for eight years he controlled the executive branch of the most powerful nation on earth, executed its federal laws, and acted as commander-in-chief of its 1.4 million active duty troops. President. Man, oh man. According to neighborhood sources, Bush then clapped his hands together lightly and shook his head in apparent disbelief. I was president. That was what I did for a living. Me, George W. Bush, for almost a decade. I did that as my job. Somebody get a memo to The Onion. I mean, it's cute, but they're going to have to get just a little bit, put a little bit of psychic difference between reality and satire and parody, because I can't find it in there. So just to let them know, they remain the most stunning, just stunning stuff. As you can tell, I'm just sort of feeling a little lighthearted here this evening, and we'll get into the heavy stuff, and there's plenty of it. But it's Monday, for God's sakes. I yearn for Mondays. I ache for Mondays. I love it when Monday gets here, because after two days of pretty much talking to the walls, and I don't even have Willie singing Hello Walls. I ought to, but after 2 days of talking to the walls, I get to talk to you again. And I do want to let you know a couple of things. One, thank you for stepping up. We did pass the, every last one of you, thank you, whether you snail mailed or whether you went PayPal, we got past some rather severe economic difficulties here that make it possible for us to say, yeah, we're going into October. November? Yeah, we're not talking about November yet. But we'll make it to October. Hopefully. We will. And we will because of you. Because you responded. And just because I'm not sitting here just flailing away, don't think that PayPal button at that headonradionetwork.com doesn't need all the love it can get. We were closer than I care to tell you about to things just kind of going beep. But we dodged it. We dodged it. But I'm in a good mood this evening. And so before we ruin it, I want to go back to the live audio of something that was raised on the program the other night, I believe by our pop culture correspondent, David in Maine. Namely, journalist Wolf Blitzer's appearance on Jeopardy. Have they covered this on Chicken Noodle News yet? I don't know. But it's out there. It's out there in the world now, and there's a nice little video montage of Wolf screwing up, the audio to which I'm going to run for you. Listen to the questions he couldn't get. And as a former Jeopardy champion and friend of the program, Eugene Finnerman, noted to me when I sent him the link to the story, he said, "You have to remember, Bob, those aren't your average Jeopardy questions." And what he meant by that, he said, at least Wolf was unintentionally wrong, unlike the cast at Fox. He was an embarrassment, however, and you do know that the questions for the celebrity tournaments are made easy. Andy Richter won the match over Wolf and Dana Delaney, but that only proves that he had the best sixth grade education. Which I suppose is true. But some of these, sixth, Eugene? Are you being a little generous there, brother? I mean, listen to what he couldn't get. This is precious.
Here's the host of the Situation Room, journalist Wolf Blitzer.
Journalist.
The name of this pasta, similar to penne, means little mustaches. Doesn't sound so tasty now. Wolf.
What is fettuccine?
No.
No.
King David and Jesus both hailed from this town. Wolf.
What is Jerusalem?
No.
No, Wolf, that's where you were posted when you were with the Mossad. Sorry.
An accused person in court, along with his counsel. Wolf.
What is a defendant?
No. From a larger work. Wolf.
Annotated?
No. Add one of this five-letter word that refers to an economic crash and the fear-driven rush to sell. Wolf.
What is a crash?
No. Wolf, things have not worked out as well as you had hoped for, I'm sure.
Yeah, minus $4,600. Wolf, things have not worked. I think, now, see, I may betray my own stupidity. I think the pasta was ziti. Panic was one of the other ones. And the place where Jesus and King David were from, that would be Bethlehem. I'm pretty close to certain on it. So, Wolf, buddy, because we love you, not. Now, this one's for you.
Against a plumber and an architect. And let me tell you what you didn't win. A 20-volume set of the Encyclopedia International, a case of turtle wax, and a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. But that's not all. You also made yourself look like a jerk in front of millions of people. And you brought shame and disgrace on your family name for generations to come. You don't get to come back tomorrow. You don't even get a lousy copy of our home game. You're a complete loser.
Yeah, that was just easy, wasn't it? Yeah, but it to be fair, who's to say? We might all come unglued under the circumstances. But Wolf Blitzer, you know, this guy's supposed to be a world citizen, well-traveled, trustworthy. Nope. He's another babbling bobblehead. And I forget which stupid question he asked in the Democratic pageants and in the right-wing pageants during the election. But you know what? He earned. That minus $4,600. So if Eugene is suggesting that Andy Richter had the better sixth grade education, Uncle Jed, I done got me a sixth grade education. I'm ready to be a double knot spy. I'm guessing Wolf's is probably around fourth grade. Reasonable? I think so. Let's see. Let's go to the phones and see what's cooking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
You mean he didn't learn his gazentas?
He didn't, didn't know his gazentas whatsoever or his ciphering.
But he lost to the man who rules the universe, so, you know, that's okay. We understand.
True enough.
All right, let's see. Well, now we have seen the fun part now. Apparently, I'm just surprised that, sent you the email, I'm surprised that Fox News didn't have them the applause sign with them.
Yeah, got busted, didn't they? Whooping up the crowd for a news story, no less.
I'm wondering if we're going to start seeing some more people start doing some videos like this at these things when they see the people from Fox sit there and see. Because apparently this guy that was not just the producer, apparently the guy that was the anchor or the reporter, he was talking to the crowd on the PA. From one thing I read said that he was talking to them, not just as a reporter, apparently as a participant.
Yeah, well, you know, what it did, you know, journalistic integrity, it's so overrated.
No, isn't it? Well, and then did you see the one about, and I can't think what the name of it they called it. It's the one that, you know, Tony Perkins, you know, coming mother.
Norman.
Not that Tony Perkins. But that apparently that they were having their little get-together this past weekend or so, and some of the people were set up to do the news things, and the people in the hall just about attacked them. I think the MSNBC people, and I think even did it to the Fox people, where they were set up there to cover, where they'd been invited, and some of the people were just essentially crowding them in, trying to stop them from reporting. Then apparently Mr. Perkins had to get on the microphone and tell them they were invited, let them alone.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, and
they're in charge of the asylum now. You realize that?
Oh, yeah. Well, did you see? I sent you the thing from Chris Matthews. He had Brooks and them on Sunday morning. on his, well, here on his little non-cable show, you know, the one that his little 30-minute show.
Right.
And he had David Brooks on there, and during the thing, him, they're going back and forth, and Brooks says this one thing. He says, the one danger, the main danger of all this, the Glenn and the Rush and all that, they're not going to take over the country, but they are taking over the Republican Party.
And, you know, who's to say they're not, Luke, because I don't know if you caught this.
The Republican Party now.
Yeah, to the point that you've got people who think that they're reasonably normal Republicans from states like Rhode Island saying, no more, I'm done now. You caught that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's this thing where, you know, like I said, you know, here you have Rush Limbaugh, where if you say anything against him within 24 hours, you have to go on and beg forgiveness. You really didn't mean it. You were just overcome by the moment. You know how it is. Sorry, just got excited.
Right, yeah.
I was on TV. You know how it is.
So just to square things up, I noticed this on Bart Cop in a little editorial cartoon, just by way of comparison. Miss Williams gets a $10,000 fine for a display of ire on the tennis court, and Joe Wilson screams, "You lie," and gets $1 million in donations.
As you said, the asylum's working overtime right now, but, you know, that's the way the asylum's been.
Oh, and by the way, this guy isn't just some Republican in Rhode Island. He is the ex-chairman of the Rhode Island Republican Hispanic Assembly. And his name is Ivan Marte.
But you know that they were talking about it the other day, and they said, you know, other than the two ladies up there in the Northeast, you know, there are no what you used to call moderate Republicans left. You know what I mean?
And neither of those two are all that moderate either.
Well, compared to the others.
Compared to the others, Mussolini was moderate.
I know. But you know what I mean? It is one of those things where you're sitting there watching this. That, you know, it's like, say, most of the ones you see on the TV now, it's like, say, you got to wonder, are they sitting there going, can you guys find anybody we can put on TV for more than 5 minutes and just doesn't start foaming at the mouth? You know, you got to think the bookers are really going through the book now. There's got to be somebody.
And I think we found a new impersonation among the Saturday Night Live crew, by the way.
Uh-oh. Which one?
On Thursday night, they premiered their new Weekend Update lineup.
James Carville.
And I can't remember the actress's name. She does some really strange characters. She does that really fast-talking character that says, no, not really, just kidding, you know, whatever. But she did a Michelle Bachmann on the whole reason, the whole way the Joe Wilson thing went down, and raised her hand when they were planning what it was they were all going to shout out at one time.
And then he had to excuse himself to the restroom and missed it.
Right, but she wanted to yell, "You're an America-hating Muslim from Kenya." No, Michelle. No. We'll keep it simple. Okay.
Well, you know, it's that, and then you saw the one where they did the news thing where they had the guy doing Carville.
No.
Oh, doing James Carville. Oh yeah. You gotta go. It's probably somewhere out there. You probably find it. He was doing Carville, and he had the skin wig on. You know what I mean?
Right.
And he had the cadence down. That's the key to him, is you got to get that cadence down. You know what I mean?
Right.
And he was doing really good. They asked, I think they had yesterday on John King's show, they showed a clip of it. And Carville, you know, he laughed. He had a good time with it. I mean, you know, they didn't make him out to be overly stupid, you know, but hey, you expect that. That's Saturday Night Live. If you don't expect that, get out of the business if you can't take that. But, no, you know, I sent you that thing over the weekend, that thing, you know, Beck versus Limbaugh.
Yeah.
Out of Politico. And like I say, you just got to wonder when it's getting to the point where Rush is going to look around and see Beck's numbers getting up high enough where he starts to worry.
Yeah, like we talked about that whole line. All right, he's not even in my rearview mirror. Well, you know what? Beck's in his rearview mirror now.
Mm-hmm.
And getting ready to shoot out the tires.
Big dust cloud following behind him. It's like, I got to see it over the weekend. Have you ever seen the movie called The Darwin Awards?
I'm familiar with the awards, but I haven't seen the movie.
They did a movie where this guy was like supposed to be like an insurance investigator. Hang on a second. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I had the radio on. I apologize.
No, it's okay. It wasn't coming back at me.
Oh, okay. But, and had the guy investigate and had David Arquette playing the guy that had the JATO rocket attached to his car. You realize why you don't do that. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. You see it coming up in the mirror. It's either that or it's Wile E. Coyote with an Acme rocket.
Taking the earthquake pills and, yeah, rocket skates.
But, you know, it's like I said, we really should check out Glenn Beck's credit card, see if he has been ordering things from Acme.
Well, you know, I don't think he has yet because he hasn't shown up with those powder burns on his face, but one can hope.
Well, that's okay. As long as he doesn't start handing over the start doing the other version of Wile E. Coyote, Glenn Beck, super genius. You know.
Oh, no, that's the version we're already getting. He's convinced of his own genius. Just ask him, he'll tell you.
I know. Oh, did you see the thing where Mr. O'Reilly was at the at this thing? I can't think what the name of it was. I apologize for.
Oh, I've got it right here. I'm trying to.
And he wouldn't let anybody, and he wouldn't let him cover it. In fact, they had somebody thrown out of the place.
Yeah, he had Mike Stark, who has tormented many right-wing radio types. Mike Stark heckled him and protested, and then the crowd cheered when he was taken out. This was the Values Voter Summit.
Yeah, and you saw who they picked for their candidate, didn't you? Their candidate.
Yes, oddly enough, something that probably would not come as a surprise to you, me, or most of the Southern folk. The Values Voter Summit chose radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee as their guy for 2012.
And next door, he'll be overselling the ShamWow and the Blue Rose Salve. Come on over, he'll sell you something.
I know. But you know, don't think for a minute that stuff doesn't bear on Mike Huckabee's mind.
Oh, like I say he's just sitting there making sure he does. You just got to wonder, does he want Sarah Palin, or does he want to make sure he gets her far away as possible?
And I guess has her big speech happened yet?
I don't know. She probably missed it, knowing her.
You know, she went over to Hong Kong to talk to deliver a lecture about free enterprise to a bunch of communist Chinese businessmen. No, really, that's what she did.
It's, I know. It's like saying that's like going to a chicken farm and telling them the value, you know, telling them the joys of being a friend of Colonel Sanders. You know, farmer's starting to wear a white suit. Run!
But, Keith Olbermann just skewered the dickens out of her her little speech over there.
Oh.
But it, too, the reason I thought of it is it, too, is closed to the public.
Oh, yeah.
What is this when you're a leading light and a shining star? And of course, Bill O'Reilly was getting from the Values Voter Summit, and this is the bet, you know, the irony of...
The irony of ironies.
Yeah. He was getting a Media Courage Award, but he didn't have enough courage to allow the doors open.
Well, you know, it's like the same thing. You know, the one I always remember when you think about this is good old Fat Tony. You know, Fat Tony don't let people tape or do anything for when he gives a speech. You know, when Fat Tony Scalia talks, he don't let reporters in. He won't let them record it. He doesn't want any records.
Well, you know, he comes by that naturally. Yeah, burn everything. Leave no records. When I write my opinions, I put it on flash paper in case the feds raid the joint. Oh, wait, we are the feds.
Well, I think I'm surprised if everybody on the desk doesn't have to strip down to their shorts so he makes sure they aren't wearing a wire. He probably talks into the salt shaker while he's at it.
Oh, and suddenly we're back to Jethro Bodine and the double knot spy.
Yeah, it's fine. As long as he doesn't, what was it? What was the one with Jethro? He had the steel hat and the shoe with the knife put in backward.
Ow! Oh, got to take that one back to the drawing board.
And what's the one he dropped?
Well, the wash tub that dropped over the truck and he couldn't see out of that. Yeah.
There's some good ones there, boy. But like you say, the good one now is going to be we start seeing stuff here for Mike Huckabee. Now, like I say, the question is going to be, who are you going to pick, Mike? Who are you going to pick for your running mate?
Well, they won't accept anyone but Sarah Palin.
That's what I mean. That'll be the fun part.
Or, I don't know. Piyush Jindal. He's an exorcist, after all.
Well, this is true, yes. Then we'll have to go through the whole thing. He'll have to make sure he's got Piyush's birth certificate out.
Ooh. Yeah, because he really... Well, see, that's the thing. I don't think... Was Piyush born here?
I don't remember, because I remember Piyush...
Yeah, I think Piyush was born here. But I still want to see the long form. Not just any birth certificate. I want that long form.
Well, I sent you the thing there, you know, where it was a $10,000 fine. I thought you said jail time, but it's a $10,000 fine if Orly Tate shows up in his court again.
And she's gotten snarky with him, and in fact, our buddy Tosh was inquiring earlier today, when do you think they'll start the bar proceedings? And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised to find out the bar proceedings have already started.
I'm surprised somebody hadn't done it already. You know what I mean? I'm surprised that, who would it be? Dershowitz or somebody like that hadn't gone in there and said, you know, why does this woman have a license? I mean, did somebody lose a bet? What? Did you run out of prizes and this is the only thing you could think to give her? Give her a law license? You know, it's
yeah, what happened? Yeah, what happened to that year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco tree?
I was sitting there thinking that, and I still remember the video of seeing Art Fleming. Oh, God. My favorite one of Art Fleming still has to be the thing in Airplane. Disasters? The Mayflower! Unfortunately, they were riding on the Mayflower at the time, but it's just a minor problem.
I'm sorry, I've got some seasonal allergies kicking in, so that if there are any extended silences, that's me killing the mic so you don't get sneezed at.
That's okay. I'm trying to get rid of the... Feel fine, but just trying to get rid of the phlegm built up in the chest cold. You know what I mean? Just it's like you cough it out 5 minutes later, it's right back again.
Well, I know that this has to be allergies because my weeping over the hapless, poorly coached Mountaineers, that ended early Sunday morning. And ever since then, the watering eyes have, well, okay, there was some watering eyes from the abject laughter of, as your fellow Tennessean David noted, with regard to Jerry Jones, just another great big oil man picking another winner. That was a good Jerry. If there was ever a good reason for you to put that thing up there, we just saw it.
I mean, the problem, I'm just waiting to see what day it is. They better have cables on that damn video screen. That thing's just like having a guillotine above the field.
Oh, it's
humongous.
And I saw some graphic showing that, they put, and I wonder if this was paid for, can't help wondering. The length of the new stadium the width of two St. Louis arches.
Oh, okay.
And lo and behold, they put arch one, and then they put arch two, and I'm thinking, well, the boys at McDonald's are happy.
Now, if you just paint them in yellow, fellas, they'd be just...
And then they tipped it on its end, and it's just slightly shorter than the height of the Empire State Building.
Oh.
And this was built with taxpayer money, right?
I mean, no, that's the shameful part. You just got to sit there, you know. You just got to sit there and go, you know, how often do they change out their city council in Dallas, or I guess is it Dallas or one of the?
It's in Arlington, yeah.
Arlington. You got
because the former Texas Stadium was in Irving.
Yeah, the old
Irving.
But like I say, you just got to sit there and just wonder, you know. Boy, I hope Jimmy paid you all a whole lot of money because I wouldn't see you guys holding that job for too long. I mean, it's like, God.
But remember, it does have a fabulous internal prison.
Oh, God. I like the one where they have to go out on the field through a bar, essentially.
Well, I saw at some point some footage from inside the thing, and there was a damn disco ball going.
Yeah, that's it. There's a lounge, essentially, what it is, and they have to they come out and go into their locker room through it. So I'm just wondering, do they all of a sudden they stop the music when they come through? It's like you just got to wonder, like somebody like Too Tall Jones, is he sitting back at home wherever he is, looking at that and just laughing his head off?
Yeah, or is Michael Irvin going, hey, I'm coming back.
you know, there's some of you just kind of sit there just.
But you know, yeah, but all kidding aside, Eli Manning just looked like a machine at the end of that thing.
Oh yeah.
Just
well, and the thing was, he looked like the machine, and Romo looked like he was just sort of like throwing it. Somebody will catch it. You know?
Don't matter which color jersey, somebody gonna get that thing.
You know, he's one of the ones you're just kind of sitting there just wondering, you know, some days are they just going to say it's time to leave now? You know, you've had your turn. Time to go away now.
Yeah, go. Go check. What was that? Jessica Simpson?
No, you got a new one now. They showed her up in the stands, but they never showed who her name was. And it's like, okay. But you know what I mean? It's like you say, it's just one of those things. He's just, you know, I say this year's. You know, for the next 2-3 years, and then he'll be gone.
And they haven't won a playoff game since.
Oh God.
I mean, that thing still stands. They didn't win one last year, did they?
No.
Okay, just checking. Then all is still right with the world. And Bart Kopp's very happy. Of course, Bart Kopp despises the Cowboys.
I understand that, but
I don't understand what happened to the Titans yesterday.
That was a great game.
Well, yeah, and so right, and then I of course. I root for the Titans. I love the Steelers too, of course, and got my heart broken there too. But that was a dandy good one too.
I mean, it's a good game. I'm sorry anybody had to lose that one. You know what I mean? Because that was just
you know what? You got the Vol Nation's got nothing to be ashamed of.
Well, I tell you what, we love that one play when Tebow went to the right and met Eric Berry, and Tebow stopped dead in his tracks. He didn't bowl Barry over, if you know what I mean. But
yeah, he didn't want any more of that. But y'all just have quarterback problems.
Well, it's like I say, you know, he's just the latest in a long string of the last four quarterbacks. We've had one that you'd say was a quarterback. The other three have been clipboard holders. I mean, Eric Ainge was the one before him, and if Eric had had, my mind's going blank now. Was our quarterback's coach for forever. I can't think all of a sudden his name. I'm sorry, my mind just...
Oh, not Cutcliffe.
Yeah. Yeah, Cutcliffe only got to work with him like a year. If Cutcliffe could have worked with him for 3 years, he'd have been a good quarterback.
Well, I tell you what, the Auburn-West Virginia game was delayed for like an hour, you know, by signs from God saying, don't play this, don't play this.
They showed some of that at the beginning of it. I was just sitting there going, when they come back, were they out on the field building the boat yet? You know, my God.
Well, they got the engineering school for it down there.
I mean, dear Lord, I mean, that was that.
But nobody left. They were all just, you know, SEC football. You know, I heard the broadcast crew, I'm surprised all these people are still in the stand. Well, you moron, it's the SEC. They're not leaving those seats for the second coming of Christ.
Hey, you could have a tornado come in one side, go out the other, and half of them would still be sitting there betting on which exit went out. Oh.
And you know, there we were. It came out, oh, my God, came out like a house of fire. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. And then we started turning the ball over on, you know, some of them were, you know, fault, the play-based. But my God, those two dumbass middle screens, son of a...
I understand.
You know, the definite... Okay, so it didn't work the first time. But we got one of those eternal optimist head coaches. Oh, we're going to run it again, and we'll catch them this time.
Oh, well, hey, look at this way. You know, we can go all the way back in ours to the old Johnny Majors theory. You know, we've run up the middle three times. They won't be expecting it on fourth. Especially on fourth and seven, you know. So, you know.
Oh, and by the way, yeah, a little straighten up from David. He says, the old Texas Stadium was always said to be in Irving, Texas, but that was after ownership rejiggered the city boundaries. Yeah, the real location was Grapevine, Texas. And he says, no, I'm not making that up. Yeah, because it's America's team. It's the Dallas Cowboys coming to you from Grapevine, Texas. Now, see, that wasn't going to work.
Hey. If that hadn't worked, Jones would have bought the damn town and just changed the name.
Jonestown? Wait.
No. Let's not go there.
Although he may be feeling like whooping up a kettle of Kool-Aid after. God.
Well, you know, for years and years, I've always said.
Tony, son, come here. Let me buy you a drink.
But I've always said for years that think my old age is catching up to me. My brain's going out. Out in Oakland, the owner, I can't, can't think of the name all of a sudden. But, you know, we all thought he was sort of the really loon of the group.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Jerry, when he had his face tightened, I really think they pulled
him. Jerry is going to so far outstrip Al Davis, it's not even funny.
You know, Al was just what it was that tries any old thing. You know, Al's sort of like the,
You know, and Bill Veeck was deemed the lunatic genius of Major League Baseball ownership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jerry's just stupid, venal, and evil.
He's a trifecta, that's him. Bob, I tell you what, I've kept you on too long. Other people need to talk to you.
All right, you take...
Have a good evening.
Yeah.
I'll catch you down in a week.
All right, bye now. We gotta recap the football weekend. I mean, you gotta put up with me out of that. It's just... Yeah, Al Davis. And this is, honest to God, Jerry Jones is just going to, they'll forget Al Davis. Al Davis was an innovator of sorts, but Jerry Jones, mean, stupid, wealthy, and venal. What a poisonous combination. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Your game sound about like my game.
Which one was your, all the...
the Bucks.
Yeah, that didn't come out so well.
No.
What? Yeah, and you know what? I didn't expect New Orleans to drop a rock on Philly like they did. Holy cow!
Well, they did great last week too.
There may be something going on down there.
I think it'd be kind of nice, don't you?
It'd be fine by me.
Got a little news from the View.
Yes.
To me, this show's kind of like what a blockhead some liberals are.
Oh, what has one of ours done now?
Well, the thing about Obama being on all the news programs this weekend except for Fox.
Oh, I know. Yes. And Chris Wallace, oh my God, he whined. I thought somebody had taken away his lollipop.
Well, that was the thing that why I call him blockhead. Why, you know, well, Barbara, you know, she said, well, why don't they try to be friends, you know? But anyhow, I don't think she realizes that after Glenn Beck was on their show, he went back and said he, you know, after he admitted he'd told lies about her and Whoopi, he went back and said, well, they should apologize to me. I told the truth.
Excuse me? What? Yeah.
About them.
No. I know. I mean, I was just, they told lies. What?
Yeah.
But it's another classic. It's another classic case of that persecution complex in action.
But what got me, this is the blockhead part, I think, talking about Chris Wallace. Joyce says, well, why did they ignore Chris Wallace? Said, there's nothing wrong with him. He's good, you know. Oh, bull. You know what? I saw him interviewing the lady from Acorn. He was so nasty to her. And had that guy from California that is always nasty when he's on those panels. It's some kind of little short name. He's tall and dark haired.
Not ringing a bell. I bet you, but somebody else will pick it up.
Yeah, so a real short little name. It's kind of like, I think it's an Arabian name. But he's really nasty. But, yeah, that's what I call a blockhead, saying that Chris Matthews is all right.
Or Chris Wallace.
Yeah.
No, Chris Wallace is not all right.
I guess. Anyway, then I wanted to say something about what I heard on Washington Journal. I got it right.
There it is.
People were calling in. They were asking them who did they think had more influence on Fox TV? Was it Glenn Beck or what's his face? Rush.
O'Reilly or.
Yeah. And people were calling in and saying, oh, Glenn Beck just opened my eyes. He tells the truth.
Yeah, open my eyes and poured vinegar in.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I got to thinking, you remember when he said he had learned to hate?
Yep.
The people from 9/11 and the people from
Oh yeah, and the time that he said he had come to the conclusion that he would be he had it in him to commit murder on Michael Moore?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. Michael Moore's going to be on Larry King tonight. And Obama's going to be on David Letterman.
Yeah, I might have to actually pay attention to that.
Yeah. But anyway, these people just, Glenn Beck has opened their eyes. You know, it's just, believe it or not, what in the world is going on? But, I mean, for that to be the guy that they believe? And then, you know, he tries to say he's a clown, and then he says, but I tell the truth. You don't know what the truth is.
No, not even close.
But I just, I have a really neat saying that John Stewart has said. Probably thanks to a lot of his writers, but he's great. I think he's an amazing man. Republicans love our country. They just hate half the people that live here.
Good. No, but I think it's more than half, don't you?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the same thing. Well, they got plans for Obama when they take over. They're going to make him back down and just take away everything that he started.
Well, that's what they said, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's their plans. You know, Bob, I'm telling you, if... You know, you said a lot of times that there's worse things than Bush. Can you imagine?
And it seems it's difficult to try to imagine that, Juanita, but it is true.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because you got the outlook like you were talking about the preacher guy,
The radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee.
Yeah. Got him and see. We know what evil lurks in the hearts of people like that. And then you got Sarah Palin believing that what people tell her, that she's like a Queen Esther. And
you know what I think of when I think of Mike Huckabee? I mean, there's, you know, he's hateful and he's loathsome and he's a disgusting excuse for a member of the human race. But I always think about his son sitting there torturing that dog.
Yeah.
As some folks like to say around here, it all begins in the home, Juanita. It all begins in the home.
Yeah. And the problem with him, to me, the scariest thing about him is he seems pretty good, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He's very deceiving.
Well, isn't that said to be one of the calling cards of the Prince of Darkness?
Yeah. He's a liar. Truth is not in him. He's a murderer from the beginning. He came to steal, to kill, and to destroy.
Well, that certainly fits well within the Republican National Convention's platform planks, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then they had I saw another thing. They had a real good hearing with, I want to watch all of it, with Dennis Kucinich on health care.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've heard of the guy that used to be in the...
Yeah.
With Cigna?
Yes, I think he was with Cigna, and I'm trying to remember his name right now, and I don't have it right.
And there was this Republican. He seemed like a kind of a nice younger guy, but he was trying to get points for the Republican point of view and had people on there that had really been... You know, twisted around, you know, left one side, down the other. And he asked this one that, well, what would you think about having single payer, you know. And he just figured, you know, oh, he's going to say, no, no, we don't need that. But I have yet to hear one person that I've seen testify that has been through a lot with the insurance is to say that no, we don't want that. And he said something I thought was really great. This man that had testified, he testified there on behalf of his daughter. She's got some kind of rare disease.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the medications and all and how they had to go through the mill to get it from the insurance company and all. And anyway, he said that if he was in charge, he'd be going all over the world where they have health care and adopting the better parts of it instead of putting them down all the time and adopting the better parts of them in our own medical care. And he was telling about that they went to, I think it was Guatemala, and his family and I think his son got sick while they were down there, and they took him in the hospital and took care of him, and he said it cost him $7. And he said that was supposed to be like a banana republic. But I thought what he said was excellent, that, you know, to take and see what works the best in all these other countries, the ones, especially the ones that have had them for several years.
Well, you know, that's something that our buddy Reverbo's touched on a while back in one of his emails. He said, you know, what happened to this notion that this is America and we can do anything we set our minds to? These Republicans have spent all of their time lately telling us what a bunch of miserable screw-ups we are.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we can't have, you know, we're not smart enough to figure out how to cover every American.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course we, yeah, Wendell Potter, yeah, our buddy Marty, yeah, Wendell Potter's the guy you're talking about. The former insurance executive, he was in the communications or PR for Cigna, right.
Yeah, but they, I want to hear all of it. It was really good what I heard of it. I just heard part of it, and I'm going to see the rerun of it. That was just one of their panels that I saw. I didn't see the first part of it, but I've seen what you said, Wendell?
Potter, yeah, Wendell Potter.
Yeah, I've seen him on other shows. And oh, they had a woman there that was, she was worked for them, you know, as an MD. She's a medical doctor, and she said that's what they spent their time doing, seeing how many people they could not pay for. And I guess she had
look, I mean, it's a known fact. That is what their bonus structure is based on.
Yeah, I know that when I worked at one of the biggest hospitals here, they had a they adopted a HMO, and they had a doctor that I thought was a really good doctor, but I lost a lot of respect for him when he took that job, you know, of denying people help. And a lot of it was like if you went to an emergency room, that was denied. And that was way back yonder when, you know, the first time I ever heard of an HMO. Of course, they had other stuff before then, PPOs and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But
preferred,
you know,
provider.
Terms,
and
yeah. Those terms that I was trying to think of, I think is CRT for the doctor's office and DRG for the hospital. I think those are the...
Well, I will defer to your expertise on that.
You know, the ones that where if you're in the hospital, they try to get you out as quick as possible so they can make maximum money without really having to take care of you.
Right.
And that goes by the diagnosis, which are certain codes and all. And then the doctor's office, they have their set of codes that they go by. And, like, as jobs go for women down here, that's a high-paying job down here. if you do that. You really have to have a BA, though. You know, you really have to have a lot of knowledge about medical terminology. In other words, you don't just say, well, they had a backache or they had lumbago. You got to elaborate on it and get the right coding to make the most money out of it. And that's been going on since 1980. Because I was right in the middle of it when it started.
29 years. Hard to fathom, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. How did the game go for Bergenhall?
They're 0-3 now. They lost, but they played respectably, and he played. I thought he played well. He's got a lot more learning to do, but we go over the game film, just like real football and everything. He's learning. It's really exciting to see that whole process take place.
Well, did you get my email?
Yes.
Okay. Well, hopefully that'll be straightened out.
I hope so. Yes.
Yeah, I do too. Give it a try.
All right, we'll do. And you have yourself a good evening, Juanita.
You too, and take care.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Not now.
Bye. View correspondent Juanita calling from Central Florida, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Yes. You know, one thing that confuses me about these people who believe government is incompetent and all that, why is that every time they get into trouble, who do they go to?
Oh, that would be, yeah.
You know, and I thought about this, you know, the banking bailout. If government is so bad, why do you need taxpayers' money?
Well, that's like Glenn Beck. Oh, God, I hate even talking about him, but today he has babbled that I hated George Bush. Obama will say that Bush started us down the path towards socialism, and he'd be right by that. Bush started the crazy spending. He'd be right again. Bush started the bailouts. Yes, he did. Hated him for it. The only problem is when Bush's bailouts were going on, Kevin, he said, I thought about it an awful lot this weekend, and while it takes everything in me to say this, I think the bailout's the right thing to do. So, you know, pick one, Glenn. Can't have them both.
But it's like, you know, if you look throughout history, whenever private enterprises fail, they always go to the government. You know, Chrysler, back in the 70s, went to the bailout. Went to the government for a loan.
Sure.
Okay? Even like previous empires, the British Empire, Sepoy Rebellion in India, because India was ran by the British East India Company.
Mm-hmm.
When the Indians rose up and started killing almost every English citizen, who did they have to go to the kind of smooth things over? The crown. India becomes a crown colony.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. From my ancestral country, the Morant Bay Rebellion, you know, blacks started rising up. Who did the English go to? The plantocracy in Jamaica. And Jamaica becomes a crown colony for the next 100 years. This myth about government, and it's not just confined to the English speaking world, because most colonial empires were started by, you know, India Company, Dutch India Company, Dutch West India. Whenever something popped up, they always had to resort to going back to the government to help them out.
And, you know, I read, and I'm sort of addled with these allergies kicking in, Kevin, but over the weekend I read a piece about corporations and the interplay between corporations and government and the federal government and some of what else, some of the other stuff you're talking about, and it's absolutely correct. The rise of the corporate structure in this country, coupled with the corporation's willingness to go back for help to the federal, but it's all ownership issues, because Once it's the camel's nose under the tent. Once you let the corporations have their way with you once, they're going to keep on doing it because it works for them.
Exactly. You know, it's like there's certain things that should not be owned by individuals or groups of individuals or groups of, such as power plants and waterworks. You know, highways, that belongs to the commons.
Yes.
You know,
it's an appropriate use of the people's money, the commonwealth.
Yeah. You know, and this is why the third world always remains, quote unquote, the third world, because we have no wealth. Okay? Like much of the third world, the utilities are privately owned. This is the only country, this is the only industrialized country where most of the utilities are privately owned. And most countries in Europe and the Far East and Australia, it's owned by the government. You know?
Because of the model they have to look at.
Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing, like I said, I don't mind individuals making my shoes or giving, you know, making a machine for MRIs and stuff like that. But I do mind when the government owns my fire department. I do mind when the government owns my right to clean. I do mind when individuals.
Yeah, I know. Oddly enough, you can narrow that objection down, Kevin, to the question of profit.
Yeah.
If somebody does all the skull sweat and the engineering and the hard work and the tool and die work and everything that goes into that MRI machine, there's no reason for them to do it if they can't do well for themselves by doing it. Because altruism is not something upon which you want to base necessarily an economy if you study Hobbes and Locke and, you know, Rousseau and that gang. Adam Smith. What's that phrase? Enlightened self-interest? But where necessities of daily living are concerned, you know, your fire department, well, that profit motive cannot be allowed to intrude into the process, because the profit motive means that the more, and you know, we saw it with GM, you know, take on the stock value for years without plowing anything back into the company, and look where they got.
Yeah. Because the electric car could have been allowed to, you know, hell, 80 years ago.
And so what you wind up with is, you know, if you've got a corporate run fire department, well, you're back in that 18th, 19th century America thing where if the house next to you catches fire and you paid for your fire department subscription but your neighbor didn't, they'll let it burn.
Yes.
And then when yours catches fire from it, they'll come and put yours out after the damage is already done.
Yeah. Well, you see,
you know, there are no, what you're talking about here are notions of the common good.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that many politicians do not, well, most conservatives do not get. It's the common good, because a lot of them have this mentality of, I got mine, screw you.
And not just that, I got mine, and I'm going to get some more at the, you know, at your expense.
Yeah. You know, and that is not a way to live. It really is. You know, it's like I've come to the point now, you know, where after what that fool from South Carolina yelled out in Congress.
Yeah.
There needs to be, dueling should be legalized within the District of Columbia. Pistols of sorts. Absolutely. They need to legalize dueling in the District of Columbia. And any member of Congress, if you get elected to or appointed, whether it be from the executive.
Yeah, but wait, that's not going to, Kevin, that's not going to work.
I think
because the crazy mean racist bastards go and practice their marksmanship, you know, at lunch every day. There's probably a right wing gun range in the basement of the Capitol complex somewhere.
Oh no, it can't be pistols. It has to be swords.
Oh well, see now you're trying to regulate it. You're such a liberal.
But I swear to you,
I want it to be ball bats and football helmets.
Oh yeah, or I would like to see some fights break out in Congress. You know, because think about the money we can save. You know.
Well, yeah, you're touching on something, Kevin. I mean, we're playing and stuff, but I thought that what Addison Graves Wilson, not named Joe, I thought that what he did was reprehensible because he was lying in calling the president a liar.
A liar.
Right.
Yeah, and I wish Barack Obama would have stepped from the podium, walk over to him, knock him upside the head, and demand satisfaction.
Yeah, get the white glove out. Exactly. But
the metal one, the gauntlet.
But in all seriousness, there was this breathless debate that took place after Addison Graves Wilson's outburst that I still think was planned. And that is this breathless business of, I can't believe he did that. Well, why not? Why do you find it difficult to believe that a right winger would behave that way? But moreover, an open question as to why, you know, maybe if we had a little more shouting and carrying on in the House, the Democrats would get over this notion that they can work with these lifeless bastards.
Yeah. This is why they need, if they really want to cut down the size of government, get rid of the Capitol Police. I'm going to see some fistfights break out. Do like with the Romans. Every senator had his band of thugs with them going into the Senate chambers. You ever read your Roman history?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Had their band of thugs with them. You know, that's what needs to be restored. And you know what? Whoever gets killed in the halls of Congress, hey, that's what happens when you want power. Gotta pay the cost to be the boss, like the late, great James Brown said.
That's true. That is true, Kevin.
But, you know, it's like, because you have these old relics there. Like, you know, an example, your senator, Byrd, you know, he's a reformed Klansman, but still, he has no business in, come on.
Well, I saw somebody refer to him as a liberal the other day in some piece, and it was in, you know, so-called real journalism.
Wow.
You know, liberals like so-and-so and Senator Robert Byrd, and I thought, what? Who are you? Robert Byrd is one of the most conservative men ever to sit in the Senate, and he just happens to come from a state that he had to have a D behind his name in order to be one.
Yeah. Well, that's not the case anymore, but
right, but you know, the Republican Party doesn't want him and it's all set up and it, you know, it's in place now. But no. I hate it when language is abused and distorted like that.
Well, the Republicans have been good at that for decades, so you know, that's neither here nor there with me, but I tell you, it's just one of those things where you need to it's like compassionate conservatism. Which is not totally an oxymoron, because to me there's only really been one compassionate conservative, and his name is Jimmy Carter.
That's the thing. The real liberals among us keep recognizing, Kevin, that we haven't had any real liberals in office for quite some time. You know, Paul Wellstone, sure, maybe. Dennis Kucinich is a liberal, but most of them are just trying to tread water in the middle.
Yeah.
And real liberal. Look, the healthcare discussion debate, whatever you want to call it, is a classic example of it, Kevin. That we're talking about triggers and public options. You know, and we're going to create, you know, maybe we'll create this one little organization that maybe you could, if you don't want to participate in the avarice-driven end of things. Well, that's not a liberal response. Well, the liberal answer to the health care question is single payer, universal single payer, period. You know, you can leave the for-profit system in place. I don't think it should be. But you could leave the avarice-driven system in place and let the rubes and the dummies and the morons keep shelling their money out for somebody to tell them they can, no, we're sorry, you don't need that. You know, I got a new list. We talked last week about the fact that cesarean sections were pre-existing conditions. Domestic violence was a pre-existing condition. I got a whole another new list here.
Yeah, acne medicine is. Oh God! It's not like when reminds me of that Bugs Bunny cartoon when Daffy Duck was in sales.
Yeah, on the 4th of July, by an elephant. Yeah, in a hailstorm.
It's like it's one of those things where you have to say, "Good God, man!" You
exactly.
Know, I just don't get it. And the thing is, their main thing is that illegal immigrants get free health care. We have better people than that. You know what I'm saying? So illegal immigrants get free health care.
Well, see. And again, they're caught in a dichotomy there, because on the one hand, they certainly they hate the undocumented immigrant workers, but by the same token, they desperately need them, and they're actively working to make sure that they die off faster. It makes my brain hurt.
I think if most of the illegal workers were from a different continent, instead of continents where tropical climates tended to come from, to put it in a manner of lightly, this would not be a problem.
You mean like the vast mass of undocumented Irish workers in this country?
Yeah.
That no one is trying to rally people again? Right.
Yeah. You know, it's like, because I tell you, my neighborhood is going through a, you know, kind of a renaissance, and it's so strange the amount of, there's a policeman who's basically, and, you know, I don't want to give his cover or anything like that. I won't even mention his name. Straight off the boat, Irishman. Straight off the boat, 5 years. If that, and he's a kid, he's young, he's in his 20s. He's undercover as one of these, you know, hipster kids that are moving into the area.
And there's, you know, I've heard that with the rise or the recovery somewhat of the Irish economy, that some of that has abated. But yeah, there are undocumented immigrant populations of all colors. But, you know, Lou Dobbs only rails against the darker ones.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty sickening, really.
Oh, yeah, the double standard.
Exactly. Well, Kevin, good hearing from you, brother.
Okay, bro.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. All right.
Okay.
Bye now. I saw an editorial cartoon over at BartCop.com today. And it was, you know, the typical guy had the big Confederate battle flag T-shirt and the battle flag hat and buttons all over, Muslim, socialist, communist. And he's like, I want my country back. So what country is that? The Confederate States of America. Exactly. No, that list I was telling you about, yeah, I got it right here. It's just stunning. The stuff that insurance companies work really hard to make sure that they don't pay for. This is from Consumer Watchdog. And they got their hands on the internal industry underwriting guidelines that show some other pre-existing conditions that insurers have used either to deny people outright or to charge exorbitant fees for coverage. Let's see. Some uninsurable occupations, air traffic controller, athlete, construction worker, firefighter, migrant worker, police officer, public utility worker, war correspondent. And how about some uninsurable prescription drugs? Now, I'm not sure. Now, this can't be a correlation between. Uninsurable prescription drugs. Allegra for allergies. Advair for asthma. Yeah, I think this does. Air traffic controller. Some uninsurable prescription drugs. Allegra for allergies. And some uninsurable conditions. Acne. Athlete. Advair for asthma. Condition asthma. Construction worker. Celebrex for arthritis. Uninsurable condition, arthritis. Firefighters, Imitrex for migraines. Uninsurable condition, ADD. I don't know. I don't know if this thing works. I don't know if you're supposed to read it horizontally or vertically. But this is ridiculous. Air traffic controllers are uninsurable. That's an uninsurable occupation? I ain't flying no more. Athletes. But this one just beats me. Construction workers. Construction workers. Why is that an uninsurable occupation? Well, it's probably an uninsurable occupation because it's dangerous. And accidents are involved. You know, I think we talked about this a little bit around Labor Day. They don't have monuments to guys that get hurt building stuff for us. We just have Labor Day. Firefighter, uninsurable occupation, firefighter, migrant worker, police officer, public utility worker. Allegra, Advair, Celebrex, Imitrex, Lamisil for toenail fungus. Lipitor for cholesterol. Nexium for heartburn. Prevacid for ulcers. Uninsurable conditions, acne, asthma, arthritis, ADD, expectant father, sickle cell anemia, therapy, counseling, or any symptoms for which physician was not consulted. What? And, of course, it goes much deeper than that. A recent study found that 25-year-old women are charged up to 45% more for insurance than 25-year-old men for exactly the same coverage. At age 40, the disparity increases to 48%. You know, this is gender-based discrimination. This doesn't have anything to do with actuarial tables or data or science. This has to do with the profit motive, the avarice motive, and whom these companies think they can get away with it against. Maternity care, cesarean sections. Yeah, bless her heart, First Lady Michelle Obama has addressed these things. And it has to be. If you want to read a little more about it, there's a Washington Post article from this past Saturday, the 19th of September, by David Hilsenrath. Acne, pregnancy among disqualifying conditions. Pardon me a moment. Conversation radio host. Allergy medicine. Yeah, what? Everybody, not everybody, but if you get them, it's not necessarily job related. hemorrhoids, bunions. It goes. Jerry Flanagan is healthcare policy director of the advocacy group Consumer Watchdog, the people that compiled the list. And he said, what these documents show is the length to which insurance companies are willing to go to make a profit. What it shows is that insurance companies want premiums without any risk. I do love restatements of the obvious. Consumer Watchdog is an advocate of the public option. And the way it works out is if you had applied, for instance, if you had received therapy and or counseling within 6 months of the application for insurance, you were automatically rejected. So just to get this straight, if you needed therapy or counseling and got it, which might make it more likely that you would become a stable human being, the insurance company didn't want anything to do with you. If, however, you wanted or needed therapy and didn't get it and are as bad or worse off than you were to begin with, you're insurable. These people are idiots. Greedy idiots, but idiots. Simply, the medications you're on can account for higher premiums. Zyrtec, Lamisil, you know, the toenail fungus stuff. Yeah. They can, I'm sorry, you're denied. Or that, or you're going to have to pay through the nose for this coverage. Chronic tonsillitis. Varicose veins. These are not bizarre diseases that you get because of, your bad lifestyle or the fact that you travel to weird, disease-ridden places. Varicose veins? These are part of the process of being way too human. But of course, humanity is exactly that to which the avarice-driven healthcare industry is opposed. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yeah. Ed.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I don't know. Confused over this health bill thing. I just picked up a little bit on what you said. I see where Boehner said it was all but dead, the whole thing. And I just, because of no bipartisan support, and I thought, well, he's right about that, that we ain't had a bit from the Republican Party or the conservatives. So I just wonder what Obama wanted completely dead, or?
Well, it's a question of what Obama wants, for starters. You know, there's no official Obama bill that I'm aware of. But he says he likes this, and then he says he likes that. For instance, President Obama appeared on Univision, which is a Spanish-language TV network. And he said that declaring that the public option is dead, he said, I absolutely do not believe it's dead. I think it's something we can still include as part of a comprehensive reform effort. And then he went on, when he was asked about getting Republican votes, he said, you know, I'd love to get a Republican vote, but I don't count on them. I think that the opposition has made a decision. They're just not going to support anything for political reasons. But the question is, Ed, who's going to get out there and fight for this? You know, the Senate's making me really, really uneasy right now. I don't know about you, but they're making me really, really uneasy.
I don't have a bit of confidence in them. Maybe Snow, and there's one more.
But Olympia Snow says she will not vote for a health care bill that has a public option in it.
Has she made that clear?
She couldn't make it any clearer to 2 weeks ago on the Sunday program. She said, no public option, uh-uh. Now, mind you, she comes from a state that provides health care for all of its people.
Bob, what besides the insurance company, why are they so much against taking the freedom of a choice away from the people? Why are they? What is?
Well, for starters, Ed, because our side has not done a good enough job of what you just did, and that is pointing out that a public option is simply another choice. That the choice is there if you want to throw money down a rat hole with profit-driven insurance, you're free to do so.
Yeah, you know what? And this may seem like a really stupid remark to a lot of people, but, you know, if we can't get the right to make some choices in this thing, then I'd say push it down, flush it down the commode, and wait till we get rid of, and, you know, put the monkey on those blue dogs and the Republicans until we get enough of people the next round after the next election to get this thing through. Or if the people are dumb enough to go ahead and push for stuff that they are, I'm talking about the public, to take the stand and do this stuff we're doing, if that is a true reflection of what the people are, then I'd say let them live with it or die with it, whatever the case might be. But I cannot believe that the majority of the public, which polls show, is against this. Now, I mean, it's a very narrow margin that they're supposed to be against it, but I can't believe that. I know the American public is...
70% of the American people want some sort of public option.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not even close. When you're at 70%, if you're a member, if you're an elected official, you should look at that 70% and say, well, okay.
Well, why are they coming up with the other number, like 51% of the people are against the public health bill in general, with or without the public option, and 49 are for it? How are they coming up with these?
Well, different polls, different agencies. And, of course, it's always in how you ask the question, too, Ed. But, I mean, they're making such a mockery of the process in the Senate. For instance, the Senate Finance Committee, that's Max Baucus.
Yeah.
You know, of course, Max Baucus can't be bothered to include a public option. And Jay Rockefeller said no public option, no support from him. He got it right.
Yeah, I know it. That's...
But there have been 534 amendments to Senator Baucus's proposal. 534 so far.
They're gonna amend it out. You know, they're going to completely, if there's enough of the type of amendments I figure is going on it, it's enough. It's like an anchor. It's taking the chain to the bottom.
Well, on the one hand, you've got people like Rockefeller trying to get the public option back in it because he's a member of that committee.
I know he is.
But on the other hand, you know, remember when the Republicans told us that since they had power, the grown-ups were back in charge? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then they proceeded to act like horses' rear ends. Well, here's a classic. This is a classic case of how irresponsible they are. Because they're throwing hundreds of amendments in, not with any eye towards substantively improving the legislation, but rather to show their disdain for the process in general. Check this out, Ed. You know who Orrin Hatch is, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
He's from Utah.
Yeah, I know who he's been a real jerk. We had a run-in with him 30 years ago.
Well, Orrin Hatch has introduced an amendment. It's Hatch F7 is its designation. He's introduced an amendment to the Baucus mark that's the purpose of it is to, and this is a quote, to add transition relief for the excise tax on high-cost insurance plans for any state with a name that begins with the letter U. Well, ha ha ha. He's from Utah. Isn't that funny? Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
That's just, no, there's nothing funny about that. He is, with that amendment, he openly mocks the legislative process in this country.
If the people want to know what he is, just look at his record since he's been in office. Like I said, the unions had a bad run-in with him years ago. But he's just an ultra-conservative jerk, and that's all there is to it. But if one more person would walk off of that committee, Baucus is dead, or whatever his name is dead anyway. And, you know, I don't know if people realize, you know, what he is and what he's, you know, he, as far as I'm concerned, he's using, you know, he's coming from the right, you know, the right instead of the left. He's you might as well call him a blue dog as far as I'm concerned, from what I understand about it. Maybe I don't understand all I understand about it, but I don't have any use for him. Maybe you got a different view.
No, not really.
But he's, and some of these people, some of them tell you has taken, $900,000 from insurance companies and, all kind of figures, you know, those blue dogs have. But if they, you know, if before this, you know, they say, well, let's get something going. I'm not particularly for that. You know, if they can't put a public option in it.
Yeah, I don't want just something to, well, look, they did health care. And Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio said the same thing. He said, we are not going to, he said, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to do health care just to check off a box and say, well, we did health care.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do it right, it's just the same as not having done it.
Yeah, it's like getting bit just a little bit by a black mamba.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit will kill you just as much as a whole lot.
Yeah, or getting half a fang from a brown recluse, or yeah,
so, you know,
getting bit on the toe instead of in the face by a copperhead. It's all the same. Yeah,
but I just don't know what the, you know. You've got the, maybe it's because there's so many things on the table on this, so many different plans, and they cross lines, or they're like spaghetti. You can't see where the ones...
No, not really. I mean, Max Baucus introduced one plan.
Right.
And the purpose of the Republican Party at this point in time, Ed, is to make sure that everything relating to health care reform dies.
Yeah. Well, when,
because they don't want it changed at all. They don't want it fixed, because as far as they're concerned, it's not broken. It's working very well for them because they are getting massive amounts of money from the healthcare industry to kill this.
Yeah. Well, the insurance is like the advertisement said. If it dies, so you know, so do many Americans for the failure of the non-passage of a good insurance plan. Through the government, and they have screamed everything they can to discourage the people. And but people, the thing about it, Bob, is the ignorance of the people is what gets me. You know, that any of them can say we don't need that, and a lot of them walking around without it, and especially young people that are healthy. They act like life don't go on and that they're not going to get old. And one day they'll, you know what it reminds me of? In the plant, you had three groups of people. You had the young. All they were interested in was a car payment and some good money. And then you had the second group that was married, and the wives needed coverages for the kids, dental and so forth like that. And then you had the group that was fixing to retire. Well, naturally, the young man didn't care nothing about a retirement plan. He was never going to get old.
No.
And
he didn't want any health care either.
Yeah, and he didn't care nothing about, you're exactly right, that's what I was going to, my next point was, he didn't care about getting health care for the that middle group, and that's what's going on here, is they don't realize that one day they're going to get old enough, and, you know, I can understand where they're coming from, because when I was 25 years old, you couldn't have sold me any kind of health plan because I thought it was King Kong. Well, that's the same way that the youth are thinking now is, you know, what I want this for. And they don't realize that the day's coming when they will. They, you know, it's like the guy that, the young guy that don't want the pension. He don't want to put 10 cents on the hour of his part into a pension plan. Give me my money. I want to make the big car payment, you know. So that's what I compare it to, is the thinking of the people. And instead of thinking of each other and joining forces to beat the real forces that are against you, which are the insurance company and these people like the Blue Dog and Max Baucus or whatever his name is, and especially old Boner, he said there's absolutely been no bipartisan support on this deal. Well, I have to agree with him, but he could have done something about it if he would have compromised a little bit. But it's like,
but they have no intention of their bit. No.
No, huh?
You know, why they complain that, well, they haven't consulted with us. Well, why do you consult with somebody that is just in the no business?
Yeah. Can we get a health deal without, if we totally ignore the Republicans in the Senate, can we get a health deal that
yes.
is decent?
Yes.
And that's called that what?
Budget reconciliation process.
Okay.
And it's been done. It's been used by Republicans and Democrats alike time after time after time.
So why are we fooling around with these
Well, it's not so much that, you know, they're going to do their dirty work, and they're going to try to slow the process. But every minute that they slow the process, that gives another minute to the healthcare industry to go and work on useless sacks like that call themselves Democrats, like, you know, Blanche Lincoln, David Pryor, the Ben Nelson of Nebraska, you know, Joe Lieberman says, well, there's no interest in a public option.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's only listening to the healthcare lobbyists.
I got a son-in-law from Connecticut, and he's absolutely speaking out in church against Lieberman, which their church is not supposed to be into politics too much. But I don't think he could help it. He'd probably give it up if he couldn't see the damage that and what Joe Lieberman is. And, you know, if you talk about the politics entering into anything, I think when a man loses the election in his party by the majority like he did, they shouldn't be eligible to change to another party between the election and the time they lost the one they was in, and then run for office and win. They should not be able to do that. It looks to me like the people spoke.
Well, some states you can, and some states you can't. And unfortunately, in Connecticut, you can.
Yeah, and you know that's a liberal thinking state generally.
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been up there and. Talk and I watch them, and I go to Norwich, Connecticut when I go, and I look around. It's almost like being back home. I mean, you know, you go in and the McDonald's people, if you happen to go in that one, are friendly, and the people are dressed in dungarees and a sweatshirt or whatever. And it reminds you just another town in West Virginia.
Yeah, folks just being folks.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know about Carter either, you know, or his position on racism, how it enters in. I know we're a racist state for sure.
We are a racist nation, Ed.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Carter's absolutely right. I mean, he was just restating the obvious. That you know, the fact of the matter is, the opposition to Barack Obama from that weird little 20% a bunch of dead enders has a racial component to it. There's no getting around it. I mean, there's a segment of this country that hates Barack Obama every bit as much as they hated Bill Clinton, and they hate him, but they hate him a little bit more because he won and he's the wrong color, according to them.
Yeah.
Because they live in a lily white world where, you know, only white people should have power.
Yeah. Well, somebody made the statement that it wasn't time for a black leader yet. But
oh, my aching back. That just makes you sick, doesn't it?
But West Virginia was a disappointment, you know. And one of the people on Steve's program the day I was listening to it, I told you something that I heard on there that particular day, because Mel called me and told me he was going to call in, listen to what he had to say. And they talked about racism, and we weren't racist. We just would rather have a choice. But I think I said before.
Yeah, they'd rather have a choice of somebody besides the black guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, there wasn't a nickel's worth of difference between what Hillary stood for and what Obama stood for, and she won by a landslide when she ran out right there. And then when Obama and her had to pace off, look what happened. The tables completely turned. I mean, you know, Obama lost big time.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody that would vote for John McCain and war, and that's another thing, Bob, at first I thought maybe we could win the Afghanistan deal. But I'm sort of convinced that unless we bomb over in those mountains and stuff where these people are dug in, I don't think we can win Afghanistan, and I'm not for that anymore. I'm not for going ahead with
it. We can bomb there till hell freezes over, but that's not going to solve it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't advocate it. The only way to win Afghanistan is to completely depopulate Afghanistan and replace that population with another one. Lots of ancient societies did that.
Well, rather than sacrifice more of our boys, and because I think people's lost sight of just how many people we've lost from here and from other countries too, the coalition forces and the general population in those areas. I really don't believe that they realize just how many human lives have been taken over there in comparison to the enemy. We're miles behind in matching numbers. So I don't want to be called whatever they call them, a turncoat or turn tail and run or whatever. But I'm just not in support of that war no more. I'd say pull our hind end out or annihilate them, one or the other.
Well, it's interesting you should bring it up, Ed, because the guy who's in charge over there, General Stanley McChrystal, is now saying he's going to have a whole lot more troops or the mission's in dire threat of failing. I don't know what he made. Well, I do know. I've read the paper, but. There's no such thing, and this is important, there's no such thing as succeeding there, Ed.
And if you can't succeed, what are we, you know, that's like entering into the ring with Cassius Clay or one of them. If you know you're going to get your head knocked off to start with, what are you going in for?
Better be a good paycheck.
You better. That's exactly what was on my mind. They better have put me a wheelbar full of $1,000 bills, if there's any of them left, before I go in there, because it's only going to take one punch from him anyway. So I don't know what to think about the whole situation. It's really... I've got an attitude of hopelessness, really. We're trying to fight uphill against a 6 foot guy, and the uphill's against you, let alone the 6 foot guy.
Now that's so true, Ed. That is so true.
Well, listen, Bob. I'll get the heck off gear and give you a break.
No, it's no break for me. You want to hang on and listen for a little bit?
Sure. I do, sure do.
All right, Ed, good talking to you. You doing all right otherwise?
Yeah, keeping up the plow pretty good. I got my land deal settled and got it settled up today money-wise and broke my heart.
And probably your bank?
Not quite, but it knocked the side out of it.
You
got to fight. When you fight, if you're determined you're going to win, sometimes it's costly.
It can be. Yeah. It most assuredly can be. Well, good hearing from you, Ed, and our best to Dreama, and we will talk soon, I hope.
All right, and you tell the family over there we said hi, and, of course, we always wish you all the best, and like you said before, we'll have to get together and have a bowl of soup or something.
Beans and cornbread's great. Good by me.
Sounds like Lawrence Welk said, sounds wonderful.
Ed, you take care.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye now.
For the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. Bye. That's our buddy Ed. And, let me just go back to this for a minute, because this is fairly important. I want to talk about these Republican amendments to the Baucus health care bill, which of course you know is a joke in the first place, because it does not have a public option. It's nothing more than corporate welfare for the avarice driven. Agony, illness, misery, and death industry. But beyond that, I want to go to something else, and that's this business of Afghanistan that Ed just referenced. This is really, really important. I know we've sort of forgotten the war now that it's Obama's and it's not Bush's anymore, and do we have to talk about it? It's kind of embarrassing. Well, yeah, we do have to talk about it because it is Obama's war now. And our whole dedication to ending that stupid damn thing, in many instances, seems to have sort of disappeared. But this is worth paying attention to from today's Washington Post, by none other than Bob Woodward. General Stanley A. McChrystal is in charge of Afghanistan, and a paper has been released, unclassified, relating to what Afghanistan looks like going forward. And the way that Stanley McChrystal puts it, the general, he says, failure to gain the initiative and reverse insurgent momentum in the near term, next 12 months, while Afghan security capacity matures, risks an outcome where defeating the insurgency is no longer possible. Let's see if we can render that into something approaching the English that ordinary human beings speak. General Stanley A. McChrystal says, I got to have a whole lot more bodies from a little meat grinder over here in Afghanistan, or we're going to lose. And you know what? That's a tough dose of draft for a president to take, Republican or Democrat. And what did I say back when the election was in process? I said, if Barack Obama goes and gets us out of those two things, the Republicans will scream, he's surrendering and he lost the war. Well, that's the political calculus, and this is the sickening part. Sometimes political calculus trumps otherwise good common sense. And this is General Stanley McChrystal telling President Obama, the machine wants more meat. Give the machine more meat, or we're going to hang goat horns on your head. This isn't, you know, this isn't a memorandum. This is a threat. Pure and simple. I don't know how you can see it as anything else. The first paragraph by Bob Woodward says, the top U.S. and NATO commander in Afghanistan warns in an urgent confidential assessment of the war that he needs more forces within the next year and bluntly states that without them, the 8-year conflict will likely result in failure. But see, there's still a lot of military mumbo-jumbo in this. Result in failure. Well, what constitutes success? There is no accurate metric for Afghanistan that constitutes success. Alexander found that out. In many ways, before that, Persian emperors found that out. That is a place that will be its own place, and no matter how many you kill, whoever winds up still standing is still going to want to be their own people doing their own thing. The memo I refer to is at present under review by the White House and the National Security Team. General McChrystal also says, while the situation is serious, success is still achievable. And I'm not trying to be obtuse here. And I'm not even trying to... I took it that the Afghanistan war was wrong from the beginning. But even assuming... Let's assume that I was wrong, and that you were wrong, and we were wrong. What constitutes success? Hamid Karzai, who stole an election, and it's abundantly clear that he stole the election, that election fraud was absolutely rampant throughout Afghanistan, propping up his government, that constitutes success? I hardly think so. As far as I can tell, having read this memo, the metric for success is that nobody ever plots to fly planes into American buildings again from somewhere in Afghanistan. They're not going to fly planes into buildings next time. Next time it'll be backpack bombs at Walmart or something like that. They'll hit us where it really hurts. But that none of that ever gets planned in Afghanistan. Well, okay, that's fine. You know, Osama bin Forgotten, he's not in Afghanistan, assuming he's alive. He's in Pakistan now. So let's declare success and come home before we feed another 1,000, 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 into the meat grinder. We aren't Alexander. We don't have Alexander's phalanxes of Macedonian foot soldiers. And we're not willing to depopulate the country. We just want to teach him to be a little bit more American. Shh, don't tell anybody. No, what am I saying? Tell somebody they don't want to be American. American is what rains hell and damnation and death on them from drone unmanned aircraft hovering, circling over their weddings. They don't want to be us. They might like to have a pair of blue jeans. And they might be American blue jeans made somewhere in China. But that's about as close to American as they want. They might want a flat panel LCD TV. But again, it's made in China. And that's as close to being like America as they want. They want their cell phones. But that doesn't mean they want us. Why are you fighting, Mr. Afghan Rebel? Why are you here, Mr. American Soldier? More troops. More troops. Oh, we're going to lick it this time if we just get another 100,000 in here. Oh, all we need is another 150,000, and we got this one down. At some point, the process of throwing good money after bad and more importantly, good lives after ones that have already been lost. There's there's the real issue. And what is a president to do? Look, David Axelrod's already at work on the re-election campaign. And I'm sure the conversation's already been had. Hey. Iraq, come here. How's this for a campaign slogan? He lost the war in Afghanistan. You better give General McChrystal his meat for the grinder. Because if you don't, you got problems. And they're political problems. Meanwhile, mamas and daddies and brothers and sisters and sons and daughters and cousins, they don't have political problems. They have flesh and blood human problems. And those problems begin with the word, the nightmare, the mistake, called Iraq. And its blood cousin, Afghanistan. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Indeed, indeed. And back we are for the third hour of bleary, watering-eyed, nose running like a sugar tree, snuffling, sneezing, half-idiotic, allergy-ridden radio. If I'm a little off the bubble, that's why. And my apologies, sincerely. Just before we go back to the phones, and you heard the number there, you know the direct dial is also 304-658-3333 if you want to save us a nickel or a buck and dial it that way if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing program that you can avail yourself of. That's cool, too. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Bob Kincaid at gmail.com. And in case you're wondering where I got the notion of making that argument about the he lost the war in Afghanistan, vote re-elect Obama conversation taking place, let me commend to you the words of one H.L. Mencken, if you don't mind. The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary. And with that in mind, consider, and I didn't talk about it on the program, because, frankly, well, I probably made a mistake, because I should be congratulating Barack Obama when he gets something right. And one of the things he got right last week was his announced, stated hope to shut down the disastrously stupid, ill-informed, bass-ackward missile defense shield that the dim leader insisted be put in Poland. Sheesh. And if you will go over to Crooks and Liars and a post today by Steve Hind, H-Y-N-D, Hind, the missile defense debate in maps, you will find A, that H.L. Mencken quote, because I love Crooks and Liars. But more importantly, you'll find a pair of maps that compare and contrast the coverage against missiles between the dim leader Star Wars plan. Remember, this is the missile defense system that couldn't shoot down a missile even when it had a homing beacon on it. Another attempt was spoiled by rain. We shot down rain. Yeah, that missile defense system. Versus the Obama plan for Aegis guided missile cruiser coverage. And if you look at the maps, courtesy of the BBC, as Steve Hind at Crooks and Liars points out, you'll notice you get more coverage out of the Obama plan. Without the disastrously expensive and incredibly ill-informed and dummied-up, faked-up, rubed-up, frauded-up, ginned-up Star Wars system. So you know that's probably where that conversation came from. And they've been monitoring it. They've been monitoring the right-wing hysteria, and just because we haven't talked about it doesn't mean that there isn't any. They've been monitoring the right-wing hysteria all along. So that when this comes out, and bear in mind the McChrystal memo has been in the hands of the White House since August the 30th. So when this news story breaks, pardon me, had to wait on that one, sorry. When this news story breaks, you know what's going to be said inside the White House. All right, ask him how many he wants. Maybe we'll be the ones who get Afghanistan right. Which leads me in turn to this from David in Tennessee. Thinking out loud, David says, Afghanistan, could that land of super hills and hollers be the ultimate West Virginia? And you know what? It's interesting David would bring that up because I had a fascinating conversation with a brilliant photographer by the name of Antrim Caskey, who has done some superb work with regard to mountaintop removal issues and has documented the protests and the violence and all of that. And she has spent time in Afghanistan. And in the course of a conversation some time back, I said, you know, hill people are similar, even if it seems utterly impossible that they would be. And she tended to agree. And that's what Afghanistan and West Virginia are. We're hill people. And David points out, 100 years ago, incoming modern transportation tamed to some degree the hills and hollers of West Virginia. Things craved by the outside world, recently discovered, were available to that world, and the race was on. Profit was at stake. Big profits. But now we must consider Afghanistan. A, there's no coal there that we know of, nor any other grossly profitable thing. Thus, no profit motive. Well, there's profit in opium poppies, but that's another story. B, the hills are higher, the hollers deeper. So the clans that live there are more clannish and their inherited geographical protection greater. And lest we forget, from the Romans to the modern Russian army, the Afghanistan fighters have whooped them all. Sounds like a double reverse yin and yang to me, David says. Time to declare victory, avoid another Westmoreland moment a la Vietnam, and haul our young and damaged pink asses to the house. Now that will piss off Toby Keith. It will piss off William the Bloody Crystal. Screw him. I vote for a massive bug out and an even more massive party on the patio. Hear, hear. Bring them home. Thank them for trying to do a job that was impossible to be done in the first place. And maybe try to work on. You remember the conversation we had with Dwayne Hunn last week about the American World Service Corps? Maybe get some people in there who don't have guns, but do have ideas for means of survival and goodwill that will forestall those plans to send planes into buildings or backpack bombs into Walmart. Because a little goodwill and a little overt decency will go a hell of a lot further than any bomb or any bullet. Now, it's very true that it may be a while before we can go in and do the decency part of things. But there are nations that have not screwed themselves up. And it could very well be that even that won't work. Because the only thing in the world that poor, poor nation wants is to be left the hell alone. And coming from a place like West Virginia, where the water's poisoned, the air is poisoned, the ground we walk on is poisoned, and all by out-of-state corporations like Consol Energy and Massey Energy and Peabody and Arch, I can certainly identify with that fundamental impulse to just be left the hell alone. Jude writes to say that she's feeling like there is some hope in the world. There have been numerous occurrences of hope for her that have been presented. And she wants to let Ed know that she'll certainly share some of that hope she has had today. Hang on, Ed. Hang in. So with all that having been said, let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Is this Koss?
Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
Muddling through.
Six of one, half dozen of another. Yep.
Yeah. I'm hoping I'll still be hanging around when my award comes through, if it does.
Amen.
It's been a rough couple of days. Here's something to throw at you.
Okay.
I was talking to an acquaintance down here who unfortunately lives on the right wing talk radio station.
Oh, dear.
Nice guy, but he's kind of brainless. Kind of like, get your government hands off my Medicare.
Oh, God.
You know.
One of those, sure.
Yeah. And here's this idiot saying, well, why shouldn't we drill? We can drill out here. There's more oil and gas in the Gulf of Mexico than there is in all Saudi Arabia. I look at him like, you know what you just said? Do you know how dumb that is? I mean, there is oil and gas out here, but we're not even close to talking Saudi Arabia numbers.
No, or Iraq numbers, or the Iran numbers.
Right. And I said, oh, okay, so you want to start dropping rigs out here, and when the first one blows, and you get all that nasty oil washing up on your sugar white beaches.
And they are like that down there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What do you think that's going to do to your tourist industry? I don't know. Well.
You do like the tourists now, don't you?
No, I don't like the tourists, but I like money.
Yeah, see?
I mean, these are the people who say brilliant things like, well, why don't the snowbirds just stay up in Canada and send us their money? They like the money, but they don't like the people attached to it.
Yeah, what's that delineation? Yankees, damn Yankees, and aren't damn Yankees? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know it. Yeah.
And then he says, well, I can tell you something you're not going to like. What we need is more nuclear plants.
Oh, they always fall back on that one, don't they?
Oh, yeah, Europe's got them all over the place. I said, wait. What do you do with the waste first? Answer me that before we go any further. Oh, it doesn't matter. We can just take it and sink it in the deepest part of the Pacific Ocean. Okay, dump it in the Marianas Trench. And then what? Won't be okay until it rots out. All right, you come up with maybe a 50-year solution. What happens when those barrels start breaking open? I don't know. Don't care. Be dead by then.
Well, isn't that the George Bush answer?
Yeah. Après moi le déluge.
We don't even know if there's going to be a history.
Yeah. Well, at the rate you guys are going, no.
It's kind of an eye-opening thing to play with the wing nuts once in a while, isn't it, Cossack?
Well, I just, you know, it's hard to realize that people are really been screwed up. Yeah, I don't care what happens after I'm gone. Well, you think your kids might, you think, you know, other people might. Well, I don't want to pay $6 a gallon my gasoline. Well, I'm sure you don't. But, you know, do you think this stuff doesn't run out eventually? It will.
You know, I was putting a little bit of fuel, and I do mean a very little bit of fuel, in the truck yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I saw a sign, Cossack, you know, because it's one of these little chain convenience stores kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
With the logo of the company on it, the name of the store, Little General, I might add, owned by Marathon Oil. And it said, you know, come to our website to learn about why clean energy legislation may mean up to an 85% increase in your fuel costs. I just thought, you know, well, I got to go to that website because that's going to be some first-class lying. And, of course, if you think about it, or if you follow, they've resurrected one of their oldest, most discredited, dirty, rotten, stinking little lies. And they did it with one of their most discredited, dirty, rotten, stinking little liars, namely Willard Romney. Now, Willard Romney is at least claims to be, although he's not, you know, he's a Michigander, claims to be from Massachusetts. And he declared that President Obama's energy policies will weaken America. And he says that the Treasury Department has secretly calculated, you know, secret Treasury Department, that the clean energy proposals of the Obama administration would cost the average American family $1,761 a year. That's the equivalent of a 15% income tax hike. There's only one problem. It's a lie. And because, you know, they keep coming back to that MIT study. You know, the one where they started out telling big old lies about $3,000 a year increases, and it turned out it was maybe a $30 a year increase, but it wound up being a net gain for average working families.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're back. They came back to that. They're just pushing the lies again. PolitiFact has called those numbers outright false. They say nowhere in the documents does the Treasury Department cite the $1,761 figure. But see, that's the beautiful thing, Cossack, about a conspiracy. The fact that you can't prove it only makes it more certain to be true among the people who want to believe in it.
Right.
Because you'll note that it's been secretly calculated with the secret calculators and the secret calculator operators. They're all working for that one.
I mean, good God. It's just, you know, the thing is, it's not as though the 9/12 protesters and the teabaggers and all that, they've got reason to scream, but they're shooting at the wrong target.
Yeah, they're being used by the people they should be screaming at.
Exactly. I mean, these are, you know, the teabaggers and the 9/12ers are the very people, by and large, that are being screwed now and will be in the future by these same healthcare and mega corporations. And yet, who are they fighting for? The healthcare and mega corporations that are screwing them. What kind of sense does that make?
Isn't that just delightful, the way that works around in that little circle? We're advocating against being screwed, we're advocating to be screwed by people who want to continue screwing us. And we're opposing the people who want to stop us from being screwed because, oh, Jesus, it makes my head hurt. These allergies are hell, Cossack.
Oh, I know. But, I mean, you know, I can't for the life of me understand why they can't grasp I mean, have you seen the Max Blumenthal interviews with the nut jobs on the mall?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I let go of my Social Security if the government gets out of all of my life. Okay, tomorrow morning, there are no police. There is no military.
And we're tearing up the road in front of your house.
Exactly. You want the government out of your life completely? And then I'll buy my own health care insurance. Yeah, for which they're going to charge you an arm and a leg and screw you all the way to the table.
No, then you'll try to buy your own health care coverage, right, and you won't be able to afford it.
Like, I don't know if you dropped by the blog recently, but I put up a piece on the health care issue. And I pointed out that all these people on the mall, I will bet you dollars to donuts that 99.9% of them have no earthly idea of what socialized medicine is.
Oh, not even an inkling.
You know, and I've experienced socialized medicine in Europe and in Canada, and I can tell you, I didn't have any problems whatsoever. I went to the hospital.
Well, that's because you were young and you weren't subjected to them death panels.
No, it's because there are no such things.
Well, there is that, isn't there?
You know, if you have your medical ID, you present that, and there you go. And strangely enough, when you walk out of there, they don't hand you a bill that looks like, mile worth of ticker tape. You get nothing except whatever medication you need to take. Amazing how that works.
Yeah, and some good wishes going forward.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine going to the hospital, having any kind of a procedure done, and walking back out without toting a 50-pound readout of
and Cossack, what does that do for the healing process? We know that where the healing process is concerned and the human body is concerned, the beginning of wisdom is admitting what we don't know. And but we do know that stress is bad for getting well.
Oh, it's a killer.
So, which ups your chances more of getting well coming out of the hospital? Coming out of the hospital and working on getting well? Or coming out of the hospital and working on getting back to work so that you can pay the stuff that the for-profit insurance didn't pay for and hopefully survive long enough so that whoever you leave behind won't lose their home?
Exactly.
Which one's more likely to make you to help you get well?
Three guesses.
Yeah.
And, you know, the amazing thing is, I remember back when I was in Europe in the 70s, people looked at me and gaped in amazement when I said, oh, I couldn't go to a hospital in the U.S. without having to pay. They looked at me like I'd gone stark raving mad. I said, you mean you have to pay to get better? I said, yeah. If you don't, they don't treat you. They throw you out. They looked at me again like, this isn't America, is it?
Yeah, this is America.
It is America, and they just don't know what it's like in here. And, the common perception is that, you know, America is America. Streets are paved with gold. You don't even need a job. Just bend over and pick the gold dust up off the street.
Right.
And it never has been like that.
No, but that's the myth that we have propagated, certainly.
Yeah. And like I said, the bad thing is that it's never been like that. Ever. You know, this idea of work hard and everything will be, will go your way. No, usually it's just the opposite. The people that worked the hardest were the ones that died earliest.
There you go.
I mean, that's why the Molly Maguires had to organize themselves. People forget even who.
And that's why they had to be so suppressed so ruthlessly.
Yeah. Well, we can't let the working man think that he deserves anything but toil and trouble.
Don't forget the death and misery part.
Well, yeah, that goes along with it. You know, I mean, like I said, people don't get it. They don't understand. The one good thing that I can think of that's happened recently is the fact that Trumka got elected to lead the union.
You mean lead the AFL-CIO?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he, but just if for no other reason than his age, he will be a benefit because, you know, he might have some new ideas that, yeah. On the other hand, expecting him to do the smart thing going forward for unions where dealing with new economic models is concerned, I wouldn't hold out just a whole lot of hope.
No, but. He's a former miner, a real miner.
Yeah, but he is a former real miner. But he is also very much, you can't say a cross word to him about mountain removal. Oh, no. No, no. He gets real cranky about that real fast.
Well, that's ridiculous. Because that's not mining. It could be a lot of other things. It can be earth removal, but it's not mining.
So, you know, a little bit of, realism. Or so much work to be done, though, Cossack. No doubt about it.
One step forward, two steps back.
Yeah, it's funny. Where do you wind up when you do that?
Nowhere. You keep on backing up.
Yeah. You wind up further away from where you wanted to be than you were in the first place.
Correct. And, unfortunately,
Well, you know that, and speaking of that, you know that Joe Lieberman is trying to hustle an addendum in the Senate, to the clean energy legislation that would provide more welfare for building more coal-fired power plants and more nuclear plants, right? Just read that today. Just made my day when I did.
What? Let's see, what is wrong with man? Not a man, I know what's wrong with him. Oh, God. Just unbelievable. Unfrickin' believable.
Truly is.
Yeah, if it weren't for bad luck, I don't think we'd have any luck at all.
Well, but it's a failure of I don't know. You see that 9-12 stupidity. No matter, even though they vastly inflated their numbers, they went. They showed up. But nobody told them. Just like very few people tell our side, the going part and the being there part is important. But where something like this is concerned, you gotta stick around. Because you have your protest on Saturday, and everybody knows it's over on Sunday. But see, that doesn't matter to the corporates, the corporate astroturfers who are running the teabagging show.
Yeah.
But it damned well does matter where healthcare or Afghanistan, anything like that is concerned. Because, and especially, well, I said it a bit. It's going to take a sustained movement of people in the streets and not going away. You know, the bonus army. That kind of thing. Yeah, that didn't work out so well, did it?
I was going to say, we all know how well that worked out.
But at least they had to respond. And there were long-term consequences. There were long-term resolutions of issues out of that. They just weren't. They weren't immediate enough, and they weren't significant enough to answer the. But you know, sometimes that kind of courage is called for.
True.
And it's a frightful business.
Well, like I said, I don't think that the powers that be really understand just how much the natives are restless.
Or what they're restless over.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Look at the amount of coverage and look at the amount of noise that came out of the teabag protests, which, as you note, were a fraud in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when we were demonstrating right before the onset of the first Gulf War. And, Bob, I've been at tons of demonstrations on the Mall. I am telling you, without any exaggeration whatsoever, if there weren't a half a million people there, there weren't any at all. And yet, in all the accounts that I read, there were thousands of people at the demonstration. Yeah, that's like saying that there were five people at FedEx Field when the Redskins were playing.
There were five, but there were a lot more than that. Yeah, sure.
Correct. You know, they're missing the other 74,995.
Well, the other thing that came out of the teabag protest was where was the balanced coverage? You know, because the anti-war rallies, for instance, you'd have, you know, thousands of people showing up saying no to the war, and, you know, a couple of benighted idiots saying we want more war. And the reportage you get out of it, Cossack, is both sides showed up to voice their feelings on the issue. Where was, you know, because there were people opposed to the teabaggers at the teabag protests.
Oh, yeah.
Where was that coverage?
You didn't see.
Nope, that standard didn't apply this time. I know. Well, Cossack, hang in, brother.
I'll try.
All right. You take care.
You too.
Bye now. Bye-bye. Calling from North Florida, Florabama. That's our buddy, the Cossack. And onward we go. About 25 minutes before the hour. A little time for conversation left if you want to join in. Hey, welcome to the program.
And now for something more harrowing.
Yes.
Something more darker and more disturbing. There is no humor in this whatsoever. I saw this story, Bob, and I thought, why? I'm sending it to you right now. I believe you need to play the video. I think it explains itself. I'm not even going to give it a setup. You should just play the video. You'll see the story, and when you see the headline, when it comes up on your screen, you'll know why I picked it. I'm telling you, Bob, there's something seriously wrong with our population.
Oh, God, I see the title.
And I want you to stay close to the speakers. If you can't take this, don't. If you have a weak stomach, a weak constitution, I want you to, go listen.
Yeah, this comes from Raw Story.
Yeah.
Is this thing going to explain itself, or it doesn't need setup?
Yeah, it does. You get to hear the guy who was.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Again, from Raw Story. Thanks, David.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do it all like that. I wasn't resisting arrest at all, but it was. I was scared of them pushing me out of my chair. And that's why I was hanging on to it. And then they threw my arm behind my back, and that's when I hurt my collarbone. Started cracking, and I was screaming about that. They didn't believe that. Just kept going and going and going with it.
The cops, like I said, tased them, and they roughed them up pretty good. By the time they had him on the ground, there was three cops there handcuffing him, and he was spitting out blood, and his pants were down, his privates were showing, and pretty much made the whole apartment complex come to a roar because they were tasing a guy in a wheelchair, and it was for no reason.
Came at me with his fist balled up. And that's when I went back in my chair, and that's when he tried to wrestle me out of my chair. I said, hey, what are you guys doing? What are you doing? He's trying to throw me on the ground, you know, and I wasn't resisting. What I was trying to do was hang it on so I wouldn't fall out of my chair and bust my head open. Because they wasn't caring what was going to happen to me when I hit that ground. And I knew it. Just the way they was treating me, I could tell there was nothing. They wasn't worried about me getting hurt, even in my condition. I mean, how much resisting I'm going to do with no legs, with no feet. How much resisting am I going to do?
The hardest part is just watching it and just waiting for a badge number, you know, when the whole thing is done.
I'm not a violent person. I'm not a violent person. I do not have a criminal background record. I mean, what they got me, what they charged me with, they even dropped those charges. I swear on my mother's grave, I never threw one single elbow of a punch at those cops. Nothing like that, because I had my daughter sit right here. Pretty much like about maybe 5 to 10 minutes into the conversation. And that's when the other officer was the tall one. They told the sergeant was in that he was on this side in my ear. Oh, yeah, you got a big mouth. And then he goes, tasing? He says, yeah, tasing. And that's when the shorter officer was right here. And that's when
he tased you under your arm?
No, up under my rib cage back here. My pants fell down and I was trying to pick myself up. And I grabbed my air conditioner. I remember that now.
I'm sorry.
And they tell me that I'm doing stupid stuff in front of my kid. These are cops, and they come in my house. What if they would have accidentally tased my kid up because of their stupidness? You know, and they're trying to justify what they did. That's the only reason why they're doing that shit with the CPS report, because they're trying to justify they did me dirty. That's all that is. And then, you know, that's all that is. They're just trying to make up for what they did. I mean, when I was telling them I got a bad heart, they kept doing what they were doing. He kept tasing me. I told him my shoulder was popped out of place. He didn't care. He kept twisting. I'm on the ground. He stuffs his neck in my... He puts his knee in my neck. Come on. I'm already on the ground. I can't get up now. I don't have any feet to get up with. And, you know, the reason I was hanging on to my chair is because when he was trying to push me over out of my chair, the first instinct I had was to save my face and just, I got to hang on to something. That's not going to let you push me out. Man, come on, nuh-uh. And that's, to me, that's not resisting. That's protecting myself. Even though you're a cop, I still need to protect myself from you, too. To me, it was ridiculous. It was pure ridiculous, man. I didn't have to go that far with that, man. They didn't have to go that far away. I mean, I can understand them coming out to a house call, you know. But to go the extra 150 miles with it was crazy.
Okay, so the backstory. This man is at his home when the Merced, California police claims that they were called out on a domestic violence. And that's when they tased this man,
who's an amputee,
who is a 40-year-old double amputee, no legs from the knees down. His name's Gregory Williams. They tased him twice at least, knocked him out of his wheelchair, publicly humiliated him, put him in jail for 6 days, filed no charges, and now the prosecutor is apparently not even going to touch it. The call claimed that an argument had broken out at his home. And one of the officers said that William's wife said he had hit her. And that then they tried to take his 2-year-old daughter off of his lap to hand her over to Child Protective Services. And that's when he was hanging onto the wheelchair. They knocked him out of the wheelchair and they tasered him. You're right, David. This is sickening.
And you know, Bob, I chose this for a reason, because I know people. I know why the outrage happened on Professor Gates. But I swear to you, Bob, if nobody gets behind this story, because I'm always here from people who support the police. With no weakness whatsoever. Show me evidence of police brutality. Show me a good example, a great example, a horrific example of police brutality. You want an example? That's it right there. From my standpoint, who gives a shit about Professor Gates when you have incidents like this? If Bill Maher doesn't pick up this story, Bob, he's dead to me. All of these people are dead to me who don't pick up a story of this magnitude. And the reason why I say that is because this guy has more courage than 99.9% of the people living today.
And he claims he has no criminal background. And by the way, after he was on the ground, one of the officers put his knee into his neck. And they tell him, well, you were doing stupid stuff in front of your kids. So his stupidity is now alleged stupidity, not even proven stupidity, alleged stupidity is grounds for tasering a human being. And you see, he makes one statement that's flawed, David, and it has a lot to do with what kind of a country this country is now.
Yeah.
He says, I got to defend myself, even if it's the police, I got to defend myself. And that's the thing. No, you have no right in an authoritarian country to defend yourself against the police, even when the police are breaking the law.
Exactly. And I'll tell you what was revealing when his son... Geez, that whole family is some brave souls. I'll tell you what, I would have stayed. I don't know if I would have gone to the press like that in that fashion and just said everything out in the open in that kind of. I don't even know if they charge. I hope they charge the police officers yet.
The Merced Sun Star now. That's the newspaper now says that the Merced Police Department are investigating the two officers.
That means they're still on duty.
Yeah, not even suspended with pay, as far as I can tell from the story.
You know, I think the thing that really gets me about it is the fact when he starts cracking up and he says all they wanted to do was fix their report. And that's what I have to say to people who don't believe in that police brutality exists. If you get caught in your screw up on your report, this is how bad turns to worse, real fast. I'm sorry, but there's something seriously wrong. Again, I have to say this. There's something seriously wrong if no one else picks up on this story. Because I tell you, and he's a veteran, too. Let's not forget that.
Tough to stomach.
And you know, I just say this in closing. We need to discuss incidents like this that happen, and we need people to stand up and to report on stuff like this in this nature as well. And if it's just going to be a celebrity factor,
how do you not ask this basic question?
Yeah.
The guys roll up on motorcycles. They're motorcycle cops.
Right.
So it's not like they got to take the time it takes to, you know, get out of the car and run around the car and do all the Adam 12 stuff. They see the guy in a wheelchair with no, I mean, it's not like he doesn't have any legs, but he's got prostheses on.
Right, right.
He's sitting there and he's got no legs sitting in a wheelchair. To what degree can a law enforcement officer even feel remotely threatened under that situation? You can walk away from the guy. You can tell everybody else, go away from the guy that doesn't have any legs and he can't hurt you.
Right.
Step back. So, you know, Mr. Williams claims that they did it just to be downright nasty, being his phrase. And you know what? That doesn't surprise me in the least. You know, I'd like to see, quite honestly, I would like to see a photograph of the officers in question.
Mm.
Because it would, you know, and you know what the current vogue is, you know, shaved head, bulging biceps.
Right.
Yeah. What if this, and pure speculation, I acknowledge it.
Yeah.
What if this is a case of, two cops who were partners and weightlifting buddies and got a little roid rage going on.
It might be.
You know, they jerked a two-year-old off his lap first.
I think this is an obvious case of racism and police brutality. You don't see white amputees getting pulled onto the ground and getting tased. Just my opinion. Maybe they're out there, but I don't think I've seen it. I've seen people who have put up a struggle and they put them in plastic handcuffs, but I never heard anything. I mean, the other thing is the fact that he said, "Please don't tase me. I could have a heart attack." Jesus Christ, if that doesn't get you, I don't know what will.
And the whole apartment complex watched it happen and began screaming when they watched them tase the guy.
This shit has to stop. And you know, if
But you know what? No offense, David, it's not.
I know. I know it's not stopping. That's the problem. And it's not going to stop. So then that begs the question. And I guess this is the question I close with. What do you do in circumstances like these that are occurring every day, even while you and me are speaking, they're occurring right now at this moment? What do you do?
I think the taser's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be one part of it. Obviously, this guy has got to sue, and you hope he wins.
I hope he gets millions of dollars.
I do too. You know, this just looks like a typical roust, frankly. And you say, "What do you do?" You know, this is mindset stuff, David.
I know.
This isn't about changing the Merced Police Department. This is about changing the mindset in an authoritarianly bent country.
I know. It's complicated because once you open one door, three other bad doors open. And then...
You know, they came into his house.
Yes. Yes, they came into his house. The fact that they were going to break his...
Now here's this might seem a little too nuanced, David, but this is interesting.
Yeah.
When they did arrest him, They arrested him for resisting arrest. You know, please.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah. but the other charge, and I mention this because, again, they came into his house. All right. They claimed that a woman had called and dropped the dime on a domestic violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
They arrested him on suspicion of domestic violence.
Right.
Now, if you've got a valid charge of domestic violence from someone, then you charge them with domestic violence. They locked this guy up for 6 days on a charge of suspicion of domestic violence because they were waiting to see if they could gin up the evidence to hang a domestic violence on him. But the cops were in a predicament because, well, yeah, I think we just screwed up. Well, arrest him. Maybe something will come along and we can make it stick and we won't get sued.
Right.
You know, how about procedures that, one of the things you're talking about here is the curse that is the domestic violence situation.
Right.
Because there are a lot of states, I don't know if California is one of them, that have taken a lot of discretion away from officers responding to these calls.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be in West Virginia that if you've got a domestic violence, the cops show up. They sort it out, they see what's going on, and they act appropriately. But because domestic violence is so dangerous and so horrific, The legislature responded to it by passing a law that says if you make a domestic violence call, the police upon arrival are mandated to make an arrest. Whether it looks like there's something there to be making an arrest over or not.
Easier said than done in a lot of this, and that's the problem. It would be nice.
You know, I'd like to see a little bit more honest-to-goodness journalism done on this.
Right.
Because,
right.
You know, there's mention of Child Protective Services. I'd like to know were they there. And, you know, is that what this was, a guy arguing with Child Protective Services and she's the one who dropped the dime? Was she there, was he or she there first and then the cops showed up, or did the cops bring the CPS worker with them?
You know,
I've read the Merced Sun Star article, and I haven't seen the answer to that question.
But you know, the other thing that really needs to start being done is when you do a piece like this, and I notice this is what happens in this case, is we get a example of hit and run journalism where they'll take one area, specific area like this, and they'll focus on this victim. And then they'll just drop him and the story and everything that's surrounding, when there's probably hundreds of other stories just like that with these police that are involved, that were involved in that incident, or police in that area. Because you know, and you have to think this way, because it's probably coming from the department's teachings as well. Make the arrest however you can, that kind of line, kind of like make the sale, like Glenn.
Yeah, get the collar. Well, you know, our buddy horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner just dropped me a note to say, under Texas law, the officers can be shot if they do that. In other words, you can shoot back.
Well, I guess I know.
But the problem is, if you do shoot back, you're still going to die, because there's going to be six more cops there, and they're going to make sure that the suspected cop killer doesn't live to tell the tale.
All I can say is,
you know, remember, in Atlanta, Georgia, a 90-some-year-old grandmother got blown away by cops who came barreling through her door on a BS charge. And she was sitting there with her gun, and she shot back, and they gunned her the hell down. I think maybe the cops might have gotten a year or two out of it, but no murder rap.
You know, Bob, all I can say is that this gives a great reason why people should have a cell phone on them at all times, so they can attempt to record the visuals that are happening. Because that's what, sadly, this is what this country... this is what this country demands now. There needs to be the videotape they can run on the 6 o'clock news, which they do have a little bit of that, but you know how it goes.
I do. Something and I just got an email rolling in, David. The non-emergency number for the Merced Police Department in California is area code 209-385-6912.
Mm-hmm.
And there's someone there at the police station, and a call has been placed, and they said in regard to the Gregory Williams arrest, they've been getting a lot of calls, and the response was, well, it wasn't related to his race.
You know, and you know, that's the problem. When you say that immediately, in my eyes, you're guilty, because why would you say it otherwise?
Look, you know, Ed made the observation a few minutes ago, David, you know, talking about West Virginia, this is a racist state, and I said this is a racist nation. And there is, you know, when you take into account issues relating to race, there is overt relationships to race, and there are subvert, I guess is the word, relationships to race. And you bring it, you know, would they have tased,
right,
under the same or similar circumstances, a white guy with no legs sitting with a 2-year-old on his lap in a wheelchair? And if you can come up with a single circumstance where they would not have tased the white guy, then yes, it's related to race. Because everything in this country that touches on someone who is not Lily White has a relationship to race.
That's true. And, you know, it brings to mind back to the story of the cops who broke into the grandmother's house, who was feeble, and she had a gun in her hands, to protect herself. And I don't know if you're familiar with the story, and they shot her, and she was black as well.
Yep.
I don't usually, you know, you don't usually see that. And when you see a pattern like this emerge, I have to tell you, the push has to be more loud, and these stories can't just get buried like they usually do, because it's bound to get worse. As much as that story is as horrific as it is, that guy's alive.
Yeah, he's alive.
His family's alive. That's what I'm talking about, Bob. We're going to have that incident.
But he's alive. But his life is likely to be made much harder in coming days and weeks. Hey, David, I got to roll out because we're fresh out of show.
All right, later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for that.
All
bye.
Right.
Calling from Maine, that's David. Glad he brought that to my attention. Our attention. Your attention. And that's, you know, a week's worth of shows figuring out, you know, what does it mean to live in an authoritarian country? That's what it means to live in an authoritarian country. Democracy, my ass. Thanks, everybody, for joining in, calling in, emailing, participating in all your myriad ways. Thank you again to everybody who stepped up in the last few days to help us avert disaster, frankly. Thank you. Thanks to John Fox and the ever-recovering Peter Godbold and Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicon, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A little slow on the get started this evening by about 50 seconds or so. My apologies. But that's because we're still tinkering with machines and all kinds of computers and foolishness and carrying on and whatnot. And, you know. But that's how these things work around here. I hope you have...